Welcome, everybody, to the Taoist Dude Podcast. In this special solo-sode episode, we're going to discuss why you should stop drinking coffee. Now, this is an interesting topic of discussion because for so many people, coffee is like your lifeblood, in a sense. It's the anchor in your routine that most people take and charge into it full force with a cup of joe. So why is it that I'm recommending you stop drinking your coffee? I'm going to break that down a little bit into why that's causing you stress in your life, why it's causing you undue anxiety, and why it's actually affecting your performance. And there's a better way to do it. Let me state this. It's a sad fact for most of us who drink coffee habitually, but coffee is an addictive substance. Similarly, cigarettes are an addictive substance on a different level, but coffee holds a special place, whereas cigarettes are disdained for the myriad of health issues that cigarettes cause. Coffee is different because coffee brings us benefits. Coffee wakes us up. Coffee puts a pep in our step. Coffee causes us to be more efficient. Does it really? So what I'm going to share with you are five different things that you should look to doing to enhance your cup of joe. But wait a minute, wasn't I just telling you that you should stop drinking your coffee? Yes. You should stop drinking your coffee the way you've been drinking it. And instead, drink your coffee in a different manner. Because the philosophy of Taoism is all about nourishment. Things that nourish us, things that make life better for us. Although alcohol isn't necessarily the best thing for health for most people, Taoists still drink alcohol because it brings enjoyment to one's life. And coffee does the same. I want to give a little bit of a different perspective as I want to talk about the Western aspect, what we know scientifically about coffee, but also incorporate some of the Eastern thoughts on it. I'm going to give you the five things that I discovered that helped make coffee better for me and for those around me. Coffee initially was served as its green, unprocessed, unheated beans. This was the original coffee drink, and it wasn't until maybe the 13th century, 14th century, in the Middle East, they began to roast the beans to bring about a different flavor. This also had the benefit of increasing the caffeine content of the cup that they were drinking. Now, coffee contains a chemical component known as caffeine. I'm sure everybody listening to is familiar with, has had, or has at least heard of if they don't partake. Maybe you want to stop it, or maybe you want to improve it and get the most out of your cup of joe. And that's what we're seeking to do here. Coffee began in Africa. The story goes that goat farmers noticed goats were acting strange after having these berries. And these berries were the coffee berries. They noticed that the goats seemed to have more vigor and were more energetic. And now it's all over the world with many people drinking coffee so much that it began to surpass tea. Tea used to be the most commonly had caffeinated beverage in the world. And now it's being replaced by coffee. If you live in the United States, coffee was always the biggest thing. We didn't drink tea. And if you look at history, you understand why. We were being taxed heavily at 3% on tea that was being imported from England. Remember, all the people in the colony were from England originally. And so because they could not have their caffeinated habits because they were being charged these extra taxes, they decided to say, to hell with tea. And that's how we had the incident in the Boston Harbor. Because of that historical context, people in the United States have always had a preference for coffee. Now, when you look at coffee, it comes in a myriad of different forms. There's espresso, there's cappuccino, there's frappuccino, there's macchiato. There's flat whites, there's pour over, there's cold brew. so many different options. Coffee always ubiquitously is served with sugar and milk or some form of dairy. I'm going to tell you later why that works so well. How is it that caffeine works in the body? How is it that coffee is so beloved by so many people? Molecule caffeine, when it's ingested, affects the brain. There's a compound in the brain called adenosine, and the receptors in the brain bind to this as it accumulates over time during the day. At a certain point, the accumulation leads to drowsiness and a drop in alertness, and then we fall asleep. Now, the caffeine molecule is very, very similar to this adenosine molecule, so much so that it, in essence, gums up the receptors. That's how coffee functions. It increases the alertness. It doesn't necessarily wake you up so much as it prevents drowsiness. Now, another thing that it does is it throws your body into what's called a sympathetic state. A sympathetic state, most people commonly know as fight or flight. You are telling the body that there's a threat. Blood gets shunted. In other words, it gets sent to the muscles away from the digestive system or other non-essential in the moment functions so that you could run or survive by fighting. This also takes blood from the upper mental logical regions, like the frontal lobe. So you tend to react more than think and act. But this doesn't seem to be the case with coffee, as coffee gives us focus. Well, what it does is the way it activates that sympathetic system. When you ingest coffee and you have the caffeine affecting your brain, it increases the neural synapse rate, meaning the brain fires more. Think of it like an engine that's running. And what happens when you hit the gas pedal? The pistons begin to work faster and harder, but they cause an increase of speed and power and torque. And this is what the caffeine is doing with the brain's signals. It's increasing the firing rate of those signals. So not only are you alert, but you tend to be thinking better on your feet. There's a gland inside the brain called the pituitary gland, which I'm sure some of you may be familiar with, as it's responsible for a lot of hormonal production. But it notices this increase in synapses and thinks to itself, there must be a threat. So it throws the body into sympathetic state. How does it do that? Is by signaling to the adrenal glands that are on top of the kidneys to release adrenaline. With that, we have an increase in heart rate, an increase in blood pressure. Your respiration opens up. But interestingly enough, you're also mentally active. It's a very interesting sympathetic state because you're focused, but you're also ready for anything. Some of you may have experienced tense muscles, for example, after having coffee. And this is the reason why it throws you into that state, that fight or flight. Part of the reason why it's so addictive is because there's a dopamine release. Coffee makes us feel good. Dopamine is a hormone or a neurotransmitter, rather, that's associated with rewards. You get success in life at something, and there's a dopamine release. Now you feel good. And because you feel good, you chase that feeling again because you want to feel good again. So imagine if you were hunting for something. Once you finally capture it, whatever it may be, and feel that great success, dopamine releases, encouraging you to go and hunt again. And dopamine occurs in many different things. But coffee does this for us. So you're getting a blast of dopamine with your morning cup of joe. And the way I like to equate it is, when you have your cup of joe and you have the dopamine hit you, it's almost as if you're sitting for the first time and spending time with a really beautiful lady and just basking in her beauty. It just feels nice. And that's the dopamine. But the issue is, the more you activate this pathway consistently, the less effective the dopamine is. You need more for it to work. That's part of the reason why it's so addictive. It's because we want that extra hit. But some of us cannot metabolize caffeine effectively. Although men are better than women, and there are people that are fast metabolizers versus men that are slow metabolizers. For some men, in 5 hours, caffeine's all gone. Congratulations, you're a fast metabolizer. In other men, it could be present after 12 hours, meaning your longest half-life is roughly 6 hours. Let's put that into perspective. if at 9 a.m. you've had 200 milligrams of caffeine, that means 12 hours later at 9 p.m., you still have 50 milligrams of caffeine in your body. At 3 a.m., that drops to 25 milligrams. Having caffeine in your system overnight affects your sleep. And because of that, you reach for more coffee. More coffee means more dopamine, means more sympathetic nervous system. It activates more of that fight or flight. For anybody that has mistakenly had a Vietnamese coffee that they chugged, you'll notice that you feel nervous, you're jittery, your heart is pounding. And these are all aspects of the sympathetic nervous system getting kicked on. But it's as a result of too much caffeine. And this is where we look at the Eastern perspectives to get a complete understanding of this. In herbal medicine, specifically in the Chinese tradition, most herbs that are prescribed, coffee is considered an herb, is 6 to 18 grams of the herb. You're probably doing a lot more than that in one go. Now, a typical cup of coffee will have about 9 to 10 grams of coffee in it. That means once you reach for the second cup, you're practically on the edge of too much. But what also matters is your internal landscape. What do I mean by your internal landscape? Well, everybody's internal environment is different. For example, if you tend to run on the cold side, coffee would be beneficial for you because of its properties that I'll be getting into in a little bit. But if you tend to run on the hot side, coffee in any amount, or even in the excess amount, will cause issues for you down the line. Remember I said that it was green coffee beans previously. That was the original method. It has the same effects as the heated, roasted, treated coffee. But the difference is that when you heat it and roast it, its effect on the body shifts. It's much more warming, even if it's not served hot. This is an important distinction because per the principles of Taoism and Chinese medical theory, it warms the body when it's roasted more than when it's green. Typically, the green one actually is cooler or cooling, so it helps bring the temperature down in the body. The way that coffee affects the body through the Eastern perspective is, number one, it enhances the movement, specifically in the liver. But it enhances the movement of energy through the body. Anybody that's had coffee will not disagree with that statement because it turns your lights on. It also presents itself as total movement of the body. Most likely you have a bowel movement after coffee. That's an example of movement. Most likely you're urinating more frequently after coffee. That's an example of movement. That's a movement of fluid, just like the bowel movement is a movement of your bowels. This is one of the things that coffee excels at, is the movement. And that means that if there's anything stuck in the body, it helps to clear it because it pushes things along. So it means that coffee's not for everybody if you take it on its own. Now, we mentioned how coffee opens up the lungs and increases the respiration. But because of its warming effect, it dries out the body. Well, it causes movement, like we said, and that's evident with the release of bowels and the release of urine. How this works is it actually decreases the sodium within the kidneys just enough that it thinks that there's excess water in your system. And so it dumps the excess water through urine. So coffee can dry you out. So what can we do about this then? So I'm going to give you the five methods now. And what they do is they take your coffee and make it into a more potent powerhouse. Something that can help serve you. Because the idea in Taoism is we want to live in a state of balance. We don't want to be too hot. We don't want to be too cold. We don't want to be too dry. We don't want to be too wet. We don't want to be too agitated. We don't want to be too calm. Because being too calm can be lazy or sloth-like. Remember how I mentioned that milk, cream, or sugar are typical additives to coffee? That's because those three elements are considered to be cooling in Chinese medical theory. So if you're cooling down, And not just temperature-wise, but what it does internally. If you're cooling down your cup of joe, then you're reducing the effect it has on your body. So if you're the person that runs really hot, adding some milk, cream, or sugar to your coffee might do you some good for the five methods. Coffee can really kickstart the sympathetic nervous system and get you agitated. And if you have too much, you get the jitters, you get anxiety, like we mentioned. You go and you find this amino acid called L-theanine. It's an inexpensive amino acid. It comes from, ironically enough, the tea plants, like green tea. And what you do is you take L-theanine with your coffee. Now, typically, when you have coffee, it kickstarts and jumpstarts your system at a sudden increase. What the L-theanine does is it slows down that increase. So instead, you get a slow, steady, sustained increase that reduces the jitters, keeps you focused, keeps your heart rate down, so that now you can be more effective. If you're going to go this route, the recommendation is you do a 2-to-1 ratio of L-theanine to caffeine. If you don't know the caffeine of your cup of coffee, take 300 milligrams. Now, the second thing, and this is going to sound weird to some of you, but you add lemon juice, a little bit of lemon juice to your coffee. Now, you might be thinking like that's sacrilegious. Yes, but the lemon serves the same function as the milk, sugar, or cream. And for those that can't have dairy or prefer not to have sugar, it's a viable option to add just a bit. You don't need the sour lemons. You could add the Meyer lemons. And you don't need much. It's just enough to cut the heat down a little bit, but it still makes for a pleasant brew. It's a really interesting trick that I learned from someone. And there are some locations in the world that do imbibe their coffee with lemon juice, some with orange juice, which I don't recommend. I was not the biggest fan of that. So in the Eastern methodologies, that's known as lifting the spirit. It's uplifting the spirit. So it could remove a depressive state. But that same dopamine makes it quite addictive. I'm going to share what to do about that as the very last thing here. Another thing that you should focus on, and this is a bonus, is have a little more salt if you have coffee during the day. It's just to replenish the sodium levels. But for most people in the U.S., that tends not to be an issue if you're eating a standard diet because you're getting more than enough sodium as it is. For those of you that are more sodium cognizant, a little more will do you good because it'll help to balance the internal fluids. As coffee, the way it's mentioned in the Eastern method, disrupts the fluid metabolism that the organs do. And in the Western scientific sense, as I mentioned, it depletes some of the sodium in the body that causes you to urinate more often. So having a little more will help replenish that and bring more balance. Now here's the third one. And I'm going to give you a caveat here. Typically, you want to find a tincture of this. It can be a little expensive and it is really sour. So I don't recommend putting it directly in your coffee unless you're a masochist. Some of you may be. I've tried it. And there's nothing I can do to fix the sour taste in the coffee, unfortunately. But it's called rhodiola. And rhodiola will help to enhance the respiration of the body, but also help to calm you down a little more. So it does a similar function to the L-theanine. But where rhodiola really shines is on those days where you're extremely tired. It's going to help with that fatigue better than just drinking coffee on its own. Because for anybody that's been really fatigued and trying to have coffee, you'll notice it doesn't always help. Sometimes it leaves you depleted and drained still. My recommendation is take some rhodiola in a little bit of water. And especially if you don't like the taste, just pound it and wash it down with your coffee. Because that's much more pleasant. How do we prevent caffeine addiction? There's two ways, actually. And I'm going to give you both as the last two. But first, we have to understand that the amount of caffeine is related to how addictive it could be. Now, studies have shown that for someone who's doing an athletic event, 200 milligrams of caffeine is the right amount to activate the body, to increase your focus, and increase your performance. But that only works if you're not used to having any caffeine in your system. Does that mean you have to completely stop drinking coffee? No, because if you keep your caffeine content to 100 milligrams a day or less, which I'm sure to some of you sounds like nothing, but hear me out. If you keep it to 100 milligrams or less, then on those days where you need a stronger boost, you will get the benefits of the 200 milligrams and you do not fall into the caffeine addiction. How do you know if you're caffeine addicted? Don't drink coffee for a day. If you get a severe headache, you're caffeine addicted. But if you keep your amount at 100 or less, you don't reach that point where it becomes an addiction, a necessity. You're able to just stop having it. That's one way to do that. If you don't really care for the daily brew, then you just have a cup every other day or every third day. And that'll do the same. But it's the amount of caffeine. And interestingly enough, the more caffeine you have, the more fat cells you release into the bloodstream to use for fuel. So if you were looking to increase your athletic performance and drop weight, I highly recommend that you get off the caffeine addiction so that you can reap the benefits of the caffeine. There is one last thing that you can do that will help overall, but you'll still be caffeine addicted. And it's not going to be pleasant for some of you. And what that is you don't have your cup of coffee right away as soon as you wake up. You wait 60 to 90 minutes and then have your coffee hit. And the reason for this is, if you wait that long, it allows your body to naturally wake up. And now you're at a normal operating level. Then you drink your coffee and it enhances that baseline level. Because the problem with drinking coffee as soon as you wake up is you're below your baseline. Temporarily, when you start drinking coffee, it'll bring you beyond your baseline. But then over time, all it does is bring you to baseline. It's no different than when someone takes steroids that affects your natural testosterone production. Taking coffee first thing in the morning affects your ability to wake up normally so that on regular days you feel more groggy than usual. And once you have coffee, it just brings you to baseline. So if you want to be working at super efficiency, don't have your coffee until 60 or 90 minutes have lapsed since you've woken up. And if anybody wants to learn more, I do have a newsletter where I drop lots of cool tidbits and information. Subscribe to that newsletter and you'll get all sorts of cool things that you could do to help improve yourself to become a better man. Thank you so much for listening in. Until next time.